out there in the air. It is, it's got all the deniability still attached to it. So that they can say, oh, well, you know, that's just a rumor. It circulated around here. And, you know, all the boys at the Pentagon had a big laugh. Oh, we were seeing how fast a rumor could get out, or we leaked something to see who it, who would leak it.
Well, I think that there is a lot of evidence that extraterrestrial intelligent life exists. We've talked about a lot of that evidence right here on this show. Some of it is even documentary evidence from the government that we've talked about in the years preceding on this show. So I think there is a large body of evidence that extraterrestrial intelligent life exists. I think there's a large body of evidence, good, strong, credible evidence, that they have visited this planet and are continuing to visit this planet. They may, and I have seen no evidence to suggest that they have set up colonies or bases here. But maybe they have. I don't know. But one thing that is evidence is the absence of hostile activity. We haven't, let's say, three or four of these extraterrestrial ships show up and decide they're going to take on any country's military. You know, this is a easy stroll in the park for them.
Yes.
And they could have done hostile acts many, 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 many years ago.
Exactly.
For thousands of years they could have done hostile acts, and there's not any evidence of hostile acts against us. There are some stories, though, of them having some wars with each other.
Well, not recently, but of course I distinguish between EBs and ETs. Mm-hmm. And EBs aren't sentient, and they're a problem. They're extremely problematic. They're not hostile, but they're problematic because they interfere.
Mm-hmm.
And ET is out for them. They're removing them. Now, remember, they're not sentient.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, for instance, in the Mahabharata, where you have the stories of the gods fighting each other with their flying vehicles and weapons of mass destruction. You know, there are these ancient stories about the so-called gods fighting each other, and what's described is certainly what we call UFOs, and it talks about them fighting each other. But there's not any place that I'm aware of where they have attacked us.
I think that the Indian people, East Indian people, are doing the same thing that the Greeks did. The Greeks created a hierarchy of gods and goddesses and compelled them with all of the human traits as an example of, you know, this virtue and that virtue, if not held by kings and queens. Well,
so you don't think that these ancient gods that are spoken of were actually extraterrestrials, that our ancient ancestors kind of turned into gods, but they were just extraterrestrials? You don't?
I think to a degree, yes, because I think that they had an event, and over time sublimated it into a legend, and it took off, and then they used it as an example of how to practice virtue and what the consequences are when you mm-hmm. don't. Just like the Greeks, used the hierarchy to show in a magnified way what avarice and what jealousy and what hatred and revenge-seeking cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Trojan War is an excellent example of that. It is magnified into an extreme. I mean, you have 10,000 ships set sail to recover one woman who wasn't taken against her will.
You know, and the problem is that in the Greek language at that time, apparently they were lacking the word next.
Well, she was a beauty, reputedly.
I've never married an ugly one.
No, your wife is, I'm sure she wouldn't be second place with Helen.
No, I've never married an ugly one, but I have said next.
Yeah, wisely, too.
Yeah, you know
about
that. Of course,
I've already ribbed you about that.
Yeah. But the whole idea that you've got the Chinese Navy, you've got the U.S. Navy, and who knows who else out there chasing UFOs with boats. What's the top speed of our fastest boats?
A boat? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're talking about the fast boats that come up off the water, 65, 70 miles an hour.
Against a UFO that can travel at 10,000 miles an hour.
There are submarines that can go faster than that. The Dolphin designs, this is highly classified, but they can go 80 miles an hour underwater.
Well, look, stuff that's classified, you don't need to tell me.
It's 95 knots, over 95 knots.
Okay. But that's fast. But what is that against a craft that they've been clocked on radar traveling in excess of 10,000 miles an hour?
If any ET that's here wanted to shake this earth in half, they could do it in minutes. But it's not done. Don't have aberrancy.
All right, so let's talk about this aspect of this story. As I said at the beginning, we're almost to the next break. I'll go ahead and set this up. I said, and I stand by it, I have nothing against Gordon Duff, and I'm not critical of him, and I have no reason to doubt his integrity. And James, I sort of set this up a little bit before we went away for break, and now I want to ask the question. I have absolutely no, I'm not for or against Gordon Duff on this. That's not the issue. As far as I know, he's got integrity, and he's an honest guy, and he's just reporting what he was told. But I have a two-pointed question here now. Number one, what's the advantage of spreading a hostile alien hypothesis if that is not based on truth? Now, look, if they're hostile, you know, I don't have a religious belief about this, okay? If they're hostile, I'm going to report that they've done this or that hostile when it happens. If they're not hostile, I'm going to report they haven't done anything hostile, which is what I'm reporting tonight. So what is the advantage of putting out this hostile alien hypothesis?
Well, it's very simple, and of course I'm not saying anything that wasn't leaked in the report from Iron Mountain back in the early 60s. But the hostile alien thesis compels people to accept a new world order or globalist takeover to defend Earth from the evil hostile aliens.
You know, I see where you're coming from with that, and I understand that as I don't question that is the case. But here's what I question. Did we need a one government in World War One or Two did we need one government to run all of the Allied nations? No, we didn't.
Well, they have tried to install institutions that would compel one world government since the Civil War.
Well, I know that. I'm just saying people should look at this and think, you know, that I hear this in the UFO community that, oh, well, the Earth has got to get together because, you know, the aliens, whether they're hostile or not, the thing in the UFO community is the aliens will not deal with us so long as we're all divided. Oh, horse feathers.
Well, if they don't deal with you, it's because of your own hostility. Because you built up eternal war as a policy. And because anything that overwhelms them is looked upon as an enemy, a threat. You will notice that it appears to be bad form, but it's the truth, that you are ruled by psychopaths. These people are psychopaths. If you start a war to hide your domestic insecurities or to further the oil production or to maintain control, if you start a war for any reason like that, a material reason, you're a psychopath. Because you have placed material things above the lives of men, women, and children.
Well, I don't think there's anybody of sound mind that really would disagree with that. But
that's what I'm saying.
You know, I don't understand how they can think that people will not figure this out. For instance, we've got this hostile alien threat out there. We've all got to unite because we're under attack. And we've got to have one government for the whole world. We didn't have to have one government for all of the Western powers when we were involved in World War One or in World War Two. Each of those countries continued to be sovereign countries, and they got along enough to fight the war and win it. And you know, getting together under one government does not make us stronger. It makes us more susceptible to corruption and less freedom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But then, you know, that's what they want. They do not want you to be free. They want to be corrupt. And this is the best way to solidify their control.
Okay, here's my second point in the question. Why would certain parts of the UFO community want to jump on this and promote it as though it is fact when there's not a shred of evidence to back it up?
The UFO community has been infiltrated from the start. If you look at people like Robert Hall, for instance, When he died, they found out that he was still connected with intelligence. There have been a number of great people in the UFO community, but the cottage industry, for the most part, is corrupt. It's not so much corrupted by, you know, being part of the establishment as it is being corrupted by being cottage industry, you know.
Well, explain that. I don't understand how being cottage industry would corrupt it.
Well, if, you know, I belonged to, or I was on the forum, UFO Updates, and this is a premier forum for ufologists. And if you hadn't published, if you, you know, then when you came out with a question that they didn't like, they treated you like you were an upstart, and they would tell you frankly, well, we don't discuss the New World Order here, or we don't talk about Bob Lazar. He's been discredited. And I would insist on saying, well, if he's been discredited, why isn't he in prison for publishing a book with a document in it, his pay stub from Groom Lake, that would be, if he's not real, if he's not actual, if he wasn't actually there to get that pay stub, then he has forged a government document and published it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I mean, that got me. You know, there was follow-up on that, in which I was ganged up on and kicked off the second time off UFO updates.
Were you rude?
Beg your pardon?
Were you rude to them?
No, never was. In one case, the way they did it was one of the published ufologists, which I won't mention his name unless you want me to.
No.
But he was a published ufologist. I never cared for his books, but I read them. He was also a admitted that, you know, he was a follower, a devotee of John Keel until John Keel came out and said something he didn't like, and then he turned on him. He was a protege. Which is what protégés do. It's their favorite thing to do. It's kind of like a youngster, you know, breaks away from the father by rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know any better.
Yeah, okay, but how does this... Okay, even though I think it's really stupid, I think it's illogical for the New World Order guys to think that a hostile alien hypothesis... will help them, and it may help them, but I think it's really stupid reasoning for them to use it in order to promote a one-world government. Nevertheless, I understand where they're coming from. But with the UFO community, I don't understand where it's coming, where they are coming from when they jump on something like this. This is not the first time. And promote this as though it's fact, when at the very best, it's a rumor.
It's sensational. It makes press. It sells books. It gets your audience to grow. Short term.
And then some jackass like me comes along and says 3 months from now, well, folks, that war out there in the Pacific, did we shoot any UFOs down? Did our West Coast go up in cinders? No. It didn't happen. So then, after some jackass like me goes on the air and reveals it, then what's the short-term growth in their books and their audience have to go flat.
I just find something else.
I guess. You had started to tell us something when we went away for break. I said, hold that thought. So if you held it, the mic is yours.
Well, before I say anything, I'd like to commend you for those videos that you had at Chemtrails.
Oh, yeah.
They are compelling. Did you know there was a movie made in 2007? About chemtrails. It was fiction, but it involved how chemtrails could be binary weapon systems. And it was banned in this country, although it was a Hollywood movie with Hollywood stars.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I did. You told me about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called Toxic Skies.
So you now have to leave the country to see it, huh?
Yeah, you can see it now.
Uh-huh. All right, let's get back to what you were going to tell us.
Well, I believe that Gordon Duff is an honest man. I like him. He's concerned about veterans. He's sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a perfect guy to feed disinformation. And, you know, the problem is that he went to the wrong people. If he'd gone to you or Randy Moggins or a number of other people that I respect, he would have had a different treatment. He went to one guy, and this guy spent an hour building up the fear factor. Even used Battleship, the movie that's been made, and a number of other things. And he actually took sound bites from it and didn't say there were sound bites from it. He took odd occurrences, smells, sounds, and so forth off the Pacific coast, building this up for a fear factor. And then he has done Duff come on, and of course, he might not have even known. Gordon Duff might not have even known how that was being built.
Mm-hmm.
But
unless he was listening to the show prior to going on the air with them, he would not have known.
But that was the wrong people to go to. Had Gordon Duff known about the EMVs, known about Dr. Berggren's work, kind of like, Ruppelt went out in the field. That's mm-hmm. what got him in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He studied, he became informed about the genre and knew that there were people in it that were not to be trusted. So he went out to these UFO conventions and he weathered through it, and so did Dr. Berggren. When I first started checking up on Dr. Berggren after I read his book, I found out that he'd gone out to towns and so forth, anywhere where there was a UFO report with witnesses, and to talk to those people himself. And then the mention of him, since he was a prominent scientist, would appear in their local newspapers, and I'd find it that way.
Uh-huh.
But so I was impressed with him from the start.
Okay. Now, we're going to open the phone lines here in a little bit, folks, and I really invite you to join this conversation. You may buy the story, and you may say, well, Smith, I don't understand how you cannot buy it. Well, I want to hear from you, because if I'm lacking some information that would change my perspective, I want to hear that. And as I said last night, and I say it fairly frequently, you don't have to agree with me in order to call and talk with me on the air. And I have no idea. We don't screen the calls, so I have no idea, whether you agree or disagree before you start to talk. I don't know. I find out when the audience finds out. And that's the way we do the show. We've always done the show that way. Now, that's not true. You know something, James? We did have a screener. I don't remember two or three nights we tried it, because everybody told me I needed to. And after two or three nights, I said, forget this. I just, people want to call and talk. I want to hear them. And, I don't need somebody screening and protecting me here. Let's just talk, because that's what this is, folks. This is a conversation. It's not just a conversation with me and James Horak. It's me, James Horak, and several million of you around the world who are listening. And we want you to join that conversation and share with us what you think. Now, we'll open the phone lines in just a bit, but let me kind of wrap up on this thing about the treatment of this within the UFO community. It's really disturbing for me to look back on the past 12 years of doing this show and think about how things have changed within the UFO community. There's not a golden age when everybody was after the truth and nobody was a misinformer or disinformer. We've never had that golden age. There's always been disinformers. But there seems to be there seems to have been a shift toward a word that you used earlier, James, the sensational. Now, look, folks, you've been listening to the show for a long time. How many times have you heard me talk about the tried and true method of the disinformation operatives. It's called baby with the bathwater. And that's where you take something that's real and you wrap it up with a whole bunch of fictionalized crap that you know is going to be identified as fictionalized crap, because you want the people to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So when they identify this part of it and that part over there is just crap, then they say the whole thing is fiction. And they throw the whole thing out, and they think it's all fiction, when in fact, in there somewhere was some real information. And it's that real information they were trying to get you to think was crap. And they did it. It works. And they do it again and again and again. Now, this thing has snowballed to the point where there's a lot of people in the UFO community that are rolling real information in leaves of crap. And then people say, well, it's all a hoax. And it's not. It is not. And the truth is sensational enough. You know, we just need to find what is the truth. And we need to be careful that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, when we look at this story, I think we're looking at not a lot of crap. I think we're looking at tonnage.
Oh, yeah.
But in there somewhere.
They have to do it this way, Kevin, because they have gone so far the other way now for 60 years to squash everything about UFOs, to squash everything about the possible presence of ETs. They have killed, murdered, and maimed people, destroyed careers, whatever, to sit on this. Now, all of a sudden, they want to use it. They want to create. You know, this is a way of creating the ET reality after they have gone the other way for 60 years. And if they don't do it this way, then people will say, oh, my God, you said there weren't any ETs.
Well,
Carl Sagan.
That's the reality that's rolled up in this tonnage of crap, is that the ETs are real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they can't deny it. But they did deny it for all those years, and they punished so many people that tried to bring it up in the public forum. And now is the time. You know, it's never been the way they've conducted themselves, the disinformation campaigns, the way that they have treated the UFO reality has never been to convince people that there were no UFOs. It was to be able to put it on ice so when the time came, they could twist it into the hostile alien thesis. And that's the way it's been since the late 50s.
All right, I'm going to go ahead. You and I will continue to talk, but I am going to go ahead and open up the telephone lines. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you have a question or a comment for James Horak, or if you just want to jump into the stream and swim with us here, and you've got some information or comments, please give us a call. If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can call us or use the flash message option over on my website. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Well, let's see. I don't know what happened. I pushed the button and the caller vanished. Let's try it again. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Mr. Horak. I listened to Gordon Duff on the other show, and I found him quite interesting to listen to, but I didn't really believe the story. But my question to you, Mr. Horak, is in the beginning of the show, you said that there were several stances that you agreed with Gordon, but you didn't go into them. Could you go into them a little bit?
Let's don't. Unless they're related to UFOs.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. I have studied up a little bit on Gordon Duff enough to know that he's taken some political stances, quite a number of them. And that may be great fodder, you know, for other shows, but for this show, we don't get into that. But, okay. James, if it's a stance related to UFOs, you can go ahead and talk about it. Otherwise, let's avoid it.
I think that he knows that there is a UFO reality. He was even involved, as he talks about, with activity just below MJ-12. And he knows that MJ-12 exists. So his experience in the military and in the military-industrial complex is adequate for that. But what I like about him is that he is an American patriot. He has taken unpopular stances that took courage. And he is concerned about disabled vets and will do anything he can for them.
Okay, Kevin, I respect your issue on that, and I understand it. And I did find him, Gordon Duff, to be very entertaining. As far as the baby with the bathwater, Kevin, it seems like the only baby being thrown out would be that there are underground bases off the West Coast.
And see, that's a possibility. The possibility is that this disinformation was put out there for the purpose, it could be, as James says, to promote the New World Order, One World Government, or it could be that there are bases out there and that somebody is getting too close to revealing the locations and reality of those bases, and they want the baby thrown out with the bathwater. It could be that.
That's the only possibility that I see there.
Mm, it could be that. It could go either way here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Horak, for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show, and thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
Certainly.
You're welcome, Jerome.
Certainly. Glad to have you call. 623-444-5889. And we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on this. Look, if you have information that confirms this battle is taking place, we really want to hear it. But we can only do that if you call us. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi.
Hi.
This is Joanne calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Joanne.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I've been following this situation with the so-called war going off the coast of San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and it cropped up shortly after some strange events. I don't know how to say this other than just put the facts out as I've seen them.
Okay.
The YouTube video about the two little boys that came across a so-called mer creature that was washed up with whales and other things on the coast there.
Okay.
Do you remember hearing about that or
yes.
seeing it? Or?
Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, but I remember hearing about it and reading about it.
Yeah, I read about it, went and looked for it, and found it. And to me, it didn't look like a real thing. It just looked like the creature was manufactured, CGI, when it popped up.
Uh-huh.
And I also followed the reading. I think that they, in the news articles about it, they talked about some kind of science group that supposedly came and got the creature and were studying it, and then they were swooped upon by some so-called government agencies that came and took the creature and all the material that they gathered about it.
Mm-hmm.
and there was a comment saying that they were going to make a show about it. Well, not that, about a month and a half or 2 months ago, my husband and I actually watched a show about it on National Geographic. And they came up with this really wild theory, guys, about supposedly the human race branching off.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
To live in the ocean and so on. Did you hear it?
I saw that documentary, yeah.
Was that not strange?
Yeah.
It was like they were looking for ways to just, I don't know, fill in the space with more garbage.
Maybe. I don't know. At the end of that documentary, they made the point that all of this is supposition and it's fictional.
Exactly.
But the whole thing was done as though it were real science.
Yes. That's what shocked me. Mm-hmm. And what really, really made me kind of reinforce the fact that I don't believe just about anything those guys say anymore.
Welcome to the club.
You don't take it with a grain of salt. You just shake your head and say, nah.
Listen, when I was a kid, we had a farm, and it was attached to my grandparents' farm. And so I spent all my weekends on the farm and all of my summers working on the farm.
Uh-huh.
And we had cattle. And do you know what a salt lick is?
Yes.
Okay, well, farmers, for those who don't know, cattle need salt, and so they will put these blocks of salt out in the field for the cattle to lick. And so I don't take what these guys say with a grain of salt. I take it with a block of salt.
That sounds like it'd be more realistic.
Yeah. You used a good word, realistic. There's not anything in this story that is realistic seeming to me.
And I feel the same way. It's like they're, like you're saying, like you said many times, they muddy the waters with all this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And expect us to believe it.
And unfortunately, a lot of people who are new to all of this will believe because they haven't learned that there's a difference between believing and knowing, and they haven't learned that their government lies to them.
Yeah, I'm sad. It is sad. Well, I just wondered. I've seen a lot of things myself that many people tell me that I haven't seen, that I couldn't possibly have seen, and that it was all my imagination until I bring... pointed out to someone else who happens to be around.
Well, let me tell you, I came back to the United States after living in East Timor for 2 years, mm-hmm. and people thought I was crazy when I talked about bats with a 6-foot wingspan and a lizard that screams profanities at you all night.
Yeah.
But let me be as pristine with this as I can. This lizard screams F you.
Yes.
And it's a real honest to God thing. It exists. And the first time it happened, I thought my place was invaded. I wanted to know who was screaming that at me. I grabbed my gun.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I have a friend who told me about that little lizard and mm-hmm. just used to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they use that a similar lizard in a commercial for insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But people thought I was crazy, and I had people that tell me, would say, oh, come on.
Yeah.
No, come on. It's real.
Yeah.
It's real. And but there's a lot of stuff out there that's real and people haven't seen. And then when someone does see it, all these people who didn't see it, they think they are the definition of reality.
That's very sad. I understand. I agree. But I know what I saw. I know what I've seen. I know what I've experienced, and it's real.
So what do you think about this story with the UFO battle out there in the Pacific? Do you think that this is to promote New World Order, one world government, or do you think it's baby with the bathwater?
I think it's both.
Oh?
I don't see that why they can't use both.
It's true.
Yeah.
Because they often do, from what I've seen and what we've all lived through, they've used many of different things to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get multiple use out of it.
If they can't get it one way, they'll get it the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now that's a good observation.
Well, it's balanced on a tightrope and establishing a credibility for E.T., because you can't have the E.T. hostile E.T. threat unless you establish some reality to it, while at the same time maintaining the deniability so that people don't say, well, look what you did for 60 years.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly, James. I agree. By the way, hello.
Hello, my dear. I really enjoy
hearing James on your show, Kevin. I really enjoy the material. It highlights facts that we all need to hear. And I call them facts, whether anybody likes it or not.
Well, and I appreciate you calling, and thank you for your very kind comments about the show and about Mr. Horak.
Well, you're welcome.
All right. Thanks much. James, we have a flash message from Kevin in Australia, and it's got a couple of questions here. He starts out by saying, this so-called war in the Pacific is just disinformation from some jokers. James, what do you think is the reason why there have been sightings of UFOs around nuclear facilities? And then secondly, can you describe the UFO that you saw off the coast of Japan, and did you see many USOs during that time? So let's take the second question. If we have time, we'll get to the first one. James, can you describe the UFO you saw off the coast of Japan, and did you see many USOs during that time?
Well, no, I didn't see many USOs. I saw... You'd be underway, and you'd be on the fantail watcher, port side, starboard side watch on the bridge, and you'd come across these lights. They would be prolific, light up a large area of the ocean floor. And I'd always ask navigation because they were studying constantly. When you're underway, they're constantly studying ocean charts. And I'd say, are we picking up with the sonar? Are we picking up a false bottom? They'd say no. So, and there are such things as false bottoms, which are usually in the Navy attributed to krill. And, but I don't believe it because, I've seen krill and, they don't give this false bottom reading.
Okay.
Of course, we're told that they do because they have phosphorus, and phosphorus will deflect or send back a sonar signal.
Okay, so what about the UFO that you saw? Can you describe that for us?
It was actually six UFOs that came in. My ship was in Sasebo Harbor, and it was just before Christmas of 1962. And they came in low. They came in from over the mountains on one side and out from the sea on the other, joined together and formed a point or a V. And
they were disks?
They were typical UFOs, a smaller variety, about 60 feet in diameter. They were right off the ship. In fact, rather ominous. And, I had been working throughout the day and night, and I was on the well deck getting the gear together. It was after 2 o'clock in the morning. I was getting all the gear together, put in the gear lockers, and the rest of the crew I thought had left, but some of them stayed to see what happened, and it led to my medical discharge.
All right, now we have a flash message from Hawaii, and this is from Adele in Hawaii. Hello, Adele. And Adele, oh, by the way, Kevin, thank you for that flash message. Adele starts off saying, sorry, no, you've asked that this not be used within the U.S., but I'm shy. But Adele, I have made the announcement, perhaps I should make it more often. Alaska and Hawaii can use the flash message because, for many people in Hawaii and many people in Alaska, there's no local calling to anywhere in the U.S. other than in Alaska or in Hawaii. And so you have to pay those long-distance charges that are just about the same as an international call. And so for Hawaii and Alaska, I have said you can use the flash message. So you don't need to apologize. We're glad you used it. But she says, a minor point about the origin of this offshore West Coast naval activity. The story was originally given to Carrie Cassidy, then picked up by Gordon Duff. That isn't the way I understand that. You may be correct, Adele. The way I understood it, and I could be wrong, was that Gordon Duff got this story from two sources directly, two sources in the government, and that Carrie Cassidy picked it up and reported on it as a result of Gordon Duff. James, what do you know about that?
Well, I did today. I am not a fan of Camelot, and so I didn't I wasn't really interested in what was done there. And so, but today I went and tried to find out, but I couldn't, because I'm not a member there, I couldn't access the archives, or even find that, video was available if you could. So, I have no idea other mm-hmm. than a couple of statements that are given. And it doesn't indicate that she had the jump on it.
Well, my information, Adele, is from, it's limited, but it's from Gordon Duff. And one of our members wrote to Gordon Duff, emailed him, and thanked him for the story and asked him if he could clarify, you know, a couple of things. And you know, Mr. Duff emailed back. Our member shared that with our members' community, and I have published it as well in the K-Files. Now, his reply was that he was merely reporting information that he received from two different government sources that had been reliable with information in the past. And so he didn't indicate that he got it from Carrie Cassidy. He indicated he got it directly from these two sources. He didn't indicate, he said he got it from these two sources in the government. So that is, I mean, that may not be correct, but that's what he says. And that's what he said in the email in his response to our member, Mike Troy, over in the UK. And so, you know, that's why I reported it in the fashion that I did.
It would be very interesting if she had her own source for that. That would be very interesting. I'm like you. My take on it is, from what I read, is that Gordon Duff got it independently through sources that he had within. And if she got it elsewhere, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, because that might strengthen our supposition that this is a long line of baloney.
Yeah.
Being fed to certain parts of the UFO community.
She is an advocate of the hostile alien thesis.
Are you sure about that, or is it just that she interviews people who are? Because, look, I interview people who are, but that doesn't mean I am.
Well, she has led guests towards that, and they haven't liked it. They've complained about it.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know, because, frankly, I don't even have time to watch my own videos.
I know how you work on your shows.
You've seen it.
Yeah, I have.
and so I don't even have time to view my own shows after we finish with them. I don't get to see them. And so I don't get to watch other people's shows. If I don't have time for my own, I certainly don't have time for others. With the exception, if there's something in a show that I'm researching, then I go right to that and watch that part of it. If it's got information about something I'm researching. Other than that, I don't get to watch shows. I interview people just as an example. Now, this has nothing to do with the war in the Pacific, okay? The alleged war. I interview people who think there is a God. I interview people who think there is no God. I interview people who think that what we call God is just sort of impersonal consciousness that permeates the universe. And just because I interview them doesn't mean that I subscribe to what they're saying. And, you know, and unless what they're saying is factually wrong, I don't interfere. I let them say what they're going to say so that we can question it and, you know, learn from them what their ideas are and what their information is. If they say something that's factually wrong, if they say that the UFO landed on the right side of the road and I know it landed 4 miles to the left and I have proof of that, then I am going to say, well, now, wait a minute, you know, we've got this evidence over here. So I don't know. I mean, I'll take your word for it for now that Carrie Cassidy is pro-hostile alien theory, but I don't personally know that.
Well, I'm pretty sure about that. In fact, some of her guests have taken umbrage with her.
Okay.
Trying to twist what they're saying towards that, in that direction.
Okay. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin James. This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Yeah, staying out of the wind down there in Texas. Oh, that's over by Florida, that storm.
Well, I'm not getting much of it, however the temperature dropped.
Yeah, I did hear it too. I don't know why this far north, but do ETs have any part in storms like that?
No. They have some rather large craft, and sometimes they come close enough to Earth and inadvertently can cause a change in the atmosphere, but it's not intended. They don't interfere. That's understood among the ET community, not to interfere, not to to create any kind of concern or fear or anything else. There have been some occasions where there have been ongoing operations that are fearful, but that was unintended too, like I often refer to Polaris, because Polaris has been used by the hostile alien group that in the government that want to try to point that out as a case where there was open hostility. There wasn't.
Okay. But, I knew I should have written this question down.
You know the problem, Rusty? The problem is, the problem with you remembering the question, is that like James and me, you're an old guy.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. it's the one I really wanted to ask, too. What a dummy.
Well, I tell you what, if you think of it, you call back in.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, thanks for the call.
Rusty comes up with some good questions.
Yeah, he does. James, we have a caller on hold, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is that guy that couldn't remember his question.
I can't remember who that was. Can you, James?
Something like Trusty or Rusty.
Oh, Rusty, that's it. Go ahead, Rusty.
Okay. If dealing with this thing in the Pacific, if these aliens can take our thought and mess with them, how can you tell whether that is being done with such an action as in the Pacific?
Well, they, not the thought, but they get it in your computers. I mean, there's any electronic media, whatever, they can command. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ahead, technologically, I mean, it's simple.
Well, then how would you tell, let's say one of these aliens came to you by chance or whatever, how would you tell the difference between a bad one and a good one then? I mean, if they can actually influence your thought, how would you ever know?
Well, they, now the EBs can communicate telepathically with you because they're designed to. They can't get in the computers the same way. They have, what they are, chunks of meat sewn together with a computer terminal. And they have a specialized job. They were sent out by the culture that created them to explore space, deep space, and to report back information and so forth. And after a long period of time, the culture that created them changed, became different, and left them, didn't recover all of them, and so they can... they can reproduce themselves.
But the question is, how can you tell if you're facing an ET and he says, "Hey, I'm a good guy"? If he's got the power to influence your mind, how can you tell that he's telling the truth?
Well, he can't influence my mind, and I have a built-in destruction mechanism.
But what about Rusty? How can Rusty tell?
Well, if it's just the ET, I mean the EB, if it's just the EB, and he is away from his craft, it's, I imagine you know, if you're not put under by what they carry in their craft, I imagine you recognize them right away. They stink. They're modified for deep space travel in the most efficient economical way, and no sentient creature is that similar to one.
Yeah, but that's how you would recognize it is an EB. But how can you tell if you meet an ET? And you're having thoughts that this is a good guy. How can you know that that's real? How do you know that's not just something he's influencing your mind to think?
They are admonished severely not to be invasive in any way.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Kevin, this is kind of a political thing, but it's definitely with the UFO. Do you think they're using these incidents like this, getting us used to the UFO off the shore, but also becoming used to having another Navy so close to us and getting us used to that feeling?
That's a good point. That's a very good point, yes. I think that's part, they're manipulating. They have created a antagonism with China over the Middle East. and pushed Russia and China together. And now they want to, you know, this is a contradiction, too, to the New World Order. So they're playing this game by saying, well, we do cooperate with China when it's really important, you know, and all that. No. The Chinese are not happy over Fukushima. The Chinese are not happy over taking of Syria. They're not happy over the manipulations within the internally destabilizing governments in the Middle East. No, they're not happy with that. They want their own presence in the Middle East, and this threatens their being cut off.
You know, Kevin, another thing I kind of see is that the reason they're kind of letting this ET thing come to the forefront is I think the free energy is about ready to be released, so they have to have something gigantic in order to hold over us so that we still need them.
Well, you know,
yeah,
it could be that. It could be that. A government can only stay relevant, truly relevant, if it stays ahead of the curve with technology and peace. Now, they can impose relevance without staying ahead of the curve. They can do it by war and economics. And that's where the whole damn planet is right now.
Right.
But a government can be truly relevant by being ahead of the curve with technology and with peace. In other words, mind their own business and take care of their own people and be ahead of the curve with technology. Then they are something that every other nation in the world wants to be. But right now, they're holding on to power rather than relevance, and they're imposing relevance by war and economics.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that could be true too, but the thing is none of us knows 100%, so by the time we figure this thing out, 100%, it's going to be too stinking late to actually do something about it.
I don't think so. Let me tell you what's coming. What's coming is every rotten apple goes through a stage where it's rotten, everybody knows it's rotten, and you can see it, and you can smell it, and it's lousy. But it continues its corruption until it shrivels and dries up of its own accord. And we're watching that happen. So, you know, all corruption ends up eating itself.
I agree with that. But that was my question I'd forgotten. So thanks, guys, and have a good evening.
Okay. Thank you, Rusty. And that'll have to be our last call because, and we have another call coming in, but I am sorry, we simply don't have enough time to allow that call and then have the response. But we do have a flash message back from Adele in Hawaii that says she found Carrie Cassidy's own blogs about this same story as Gordon Duff's, which she saw before seeing Gordon's, and she says, I don't follow Carrie. Well, you may have seen it before you saw Gordon's story, but that doesn't mean that Carrie had it before Gordon.
Yeah.
You may have seen her reporting of it first, but that doesn't mean that she had the story first. Gordon may have had the story first, and then Carrie reported it. Then you saw her report before you saw anything from Gordon. Gordon's testimony on this, when I say his testimony, his email, says that he got this information directly from two government sources, and he didn't mention ever getting it from Carrie Cassidy. So I would think Gordon Duff got this first, and got it from the two government sources. And I think the two government sources dealt him some pretty lousy cards here. All right, we're out of time, and James, if you'll stay on the line with me as I bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.